Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well podcast. Today, I've got Jerry Zanstra joining me to discuss a very special project we've been working on for several years at Mindspring. So, Jerry, we don't usually discuss company matters, per se, here on the podcast, because our goal is just to build into the learning and development community.
True.
But this topic is really timely, and there's been so much interest in it that we thought we'd dig into it in the podcast. Mm-hmm. And I will also say in the show notes, we'll also put links to a webinar that we've done and some other resources, just because we've had so many requests.
Right.
But today, the title of our podcast is really Defend the Spend, How to Measure Return on Investment as a Learning Professional. And you're kind of the expert. This has been a little bit of your baby here for quite a while now.
Well, it's been a long journey, kind of a slow one, figuring things out and thinking through what learning teams might need and CLOs might need. So, it's been a long time to get here, but we've had a lot of fun, and your thoughts and insights have been invaluable.
Oh, well, thank you. It's been a lot of fun for those of you listening. It's been a lot of fun to just bounce ideas off each other, think through things, try and figure it out. And return on investment is the issue right now in the L&D community. And I think that what we're going to do today is talk a little bit about the industry as a whole, kind of an overview, where we've seen a need. And then a little bit about really the solution that we're proposing that I think is something different than what's out there right now. So that's where we're headed on this podcast. I think it should be interesting. So let's talk about the industry landscape, right? Like I remember a couple years ago, more than that probably, we went to DevLearn. We mapped, I remember, on our agenda every session that was anything about
it. When you say we, I think you did that. I was just wandering around aimlessly. No. But yeah.
I do recall getting lost at one point, having to text somebody to help me. The building was so big in Las Vegas. But yeah, we went specifically to look for anything on measuring learning. I mean, it's something that's so important. And we've always done it. It's always been valuable. But just, is there a tool out there we could use?
Yeah, something we all know we need to do it. The question is how. And we've looked at a number of different tools back from DevLearn. I mean, you remember that. We walked into the sort of the ROI or measuring the impact of learning little subset, and it was standing room only.
It was
packed.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's trying to figure this out, and we've seen that too, just in releasing the learning scorecard and getting a sense of what people are attempting to understand and the insights that they seek. The reaction has been like nothing we've ever seen before. So that tells me there's an enormous need in the industry. And then just, economics are part of my background, and it makes sense. So in large corporations, in government entities, things that are incremental usually don't get much attention.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Things that increased 1 or 2 or 3% or decreased 1 or 2 or 3%, those budgets don't get eyes on them. Mm-hmm. What gets eyes on is when you have an enormous increase in budget.
And rightfully so.
And rightfully so. Yeah. Sooner or later, somebody is going to show up at your office door or your cubicle and say, okay, in the last 2 years, you've greatly increased your learning budget. How'd that go? What happened? Can you demonstrate to us what happened? And again, people in the C-suite in very large organizations, the CFOs and so on, they have to pay very careful attention. It's their job. They're not being mean or rude or cruel or anything.
No, absolutely, that's their job.
They're simply trying to understand, we spent X, and what is the Y that happened? And so I think it was actually an article you pointed me to a few months back, looking at last year, the average learning and training and development budget increased by over 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's good reasons for that.
Absolutely. I mean, we transitioned from DevLearn, where people are interested, not finding anything. Then COVID hits,
right,
which is a huge game changer.
Right. So everybody got their budgets up.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say everybody. The majority of people. Mm-hmm. Saw significant increases in their budgets. Some, again, I know a couple of instances where budgets were doubled.
Yeah, it's been crazy. But for the first time ever, you could see the actual need for it. I mean, is everyone right. in the company scrambling to provide whatever yep. it is, onboarding, compliance training, safety, yep. somehow virtually, we call it emergency learning, right? Suddenly that need was first, front and foremost.
Yeah, the VPs of learning and the CLOs were, were getting way more attention
yes.
than they've gotten in past years. So now, how do you defend that spend? Mm-hmm. And in other areas, the CFO looks at something like capital equipment and saying, if we spend $10 million and we buy this piece of equipment, I can tell you in 3 years it will pay for itself. And after that, the profitability will be this. And then every single month, I can show you how that machine is performing. I can show it on a really cool dashboard. HR systems and ops systems can all show
Absolutely.
That kind of stuff.
Yep.
NetSuite and some other things can do wonderful jobs of showing direct return on investment. You put in X, you got Y. It's very hard to do that in learning. Not only that, but it's not just the ROI. It's not just the financial piece. There's that true 360 view. So the first ebook
right.
that you and I worked on, it was called The Triple Bottom Line of Learning. It was looking at there are all sorts of investments. You have to expand how you think of investments. The company
it's not just money.
It's not. The company is investing money. The company is certainly investing money, truly, financials. But you have the investment of the learning team.
Mm-hmm.
What do they think of the learning that they're creating and the learning experiences that they're building?
And the cost of not doing it, something building maybe a different, what are their priorities? There's costs there with
yep.
what they choose.
And opportunity costs
yes.
with
yep.
what works and yep. what's not working. And, is your audience reacting well to this? Are your learners reacting well? And then you have the learners themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're also investing their time. Now, that's on company time, I get that. But
Maybe.
Very often,
yeah.
Sometimes it's not on company time. And sometimes there are 50 other things they would prefer to do mm-hmm. at that or need to do at that particular moment. So how do you know if you're meeting the financial goals? How do you know if your learning team is adequately functioning? And how do you know if this is actually helping people, if the learners actually are learning things that they're able to put in place and it can show up in their behavior, which is, so Miriam and I have worked on two different ebooks on this. Again,
mm-hmm.
the first one was on triple bottom line of thinking through, all the ways that learning needs to be measured.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second one on the learning scorecard, which is a piece of software.
And that's where we're definitely going to get there today. That's
yep.
an exciting piece.
And that's where we need to get because, your learning management system probably can spit out a ridiculous amount of data. What do you do with that?
Right.
Where
what does it even mean?
Go.
Right.
You end up with giant Excel spreadsheets. Great. somewhere in there is insight. Somewhere in there is wisdom. Somewhere in there is some ability to predict
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen next. And so we built the learning scorecard with the idea of giving learning teams, and there's different audiences, really. It's
right.
not just the learning team. We wanted to give the learning team an insight into their own performance
mm-hmm.
and how learners are reacting, what learners are learning, how their behaviors are changing, and finally ROI. But we also wanted to give insight into HR and ops, where people can say, I literally can see behavior changing.
Behaviors changed, yeah.
Not
right.
just narrative,
right? Not just this nice story.
Yep. Not just this qualitative component, but an actual thing we can quantify.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, we wanted to be able to show if they stuck X amount of dollars in, this is the true return that they got. The flip side of that, and the dangerous part, is if you can't defend that, you are the number one person to
Absolutely.
Be cut. So what goes
yep.
up will come down if
yep.
you can't defend it.
Yep.
So that's kind of the defend the spend concept.
Yeah, that's what I think has been kind of an interesting, not contradiction, but maybe like the conundrum for, like we talked about learning and development professionals. So all of a sudden budgets are doubled, which is amazing. And to be able to work with and determine what priorities are and maybe in a way that they've never had in the past. But as you said, that comes with increased scrutiny.
Accountability.
Absolutely. And obviously, I think in this industry, we all welcome that because we know what we're doing mm-hmm. is good work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult. In fact, I just read an article the other day where a CLO was talking about they're in the C-suite, you know, they're doing their executive presentations and everybody's got a dashboard or a spreadsheet or something. And then the CLO has a story to tell. Well, and again,
let me tell you about Tom.
There's right. There's value to that. But again, just feeling and also feeling like we know it's important. Mm-hmm. But how do we create a tool that actually allows us to show that what we are doing is valuable and not just a dollar amount? So I think I love that you pointed that out. Like, there's all kinds of opportunity costs and all kinds of other hidden costs that
everybody's
need to be
investing.
Tracked.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's absolutely
investing all up and down the line.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, and so here's as we so we see this need. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of tracing the evolution of our story here. We also then thought, okay, well, let's go see what we can find. I mean, there's lots of smart people out there, smarter than I am, and I'm sure there's something out there. So we did a big industry study. I mean, we looked across all sorts of platforms and in your LMS or your LXP or your other, you know, what, however you're tracking, there's all kinds of reports. And so it's not that that's not available, but to your point, they're not. It's hard to make sense of them, mm-hmm. or maybe you can't get the report that you really want, mm-hmm. Or you tend to be tracking, I honestly think it's typically you're tracking in Kirkpatrick's sort of level two, which is what kind of, like, did they get a 70%? Did they get 80% on their knowledge check? Like, what is that?
Right.
And it's very surfacey, and then you can't isolate, was it the learning that helped with that, or were there some other things going on?
Well, at that point, you can tell someone participated or they didn't. So that's binary. That's mm-hmm. a one or a zero.
Right.
And after that, you can tell, did they pass at the whatever level you set?
Mm-hmm.
So beyond that, you really don't know, did their behavior change?
Right.
You know, you're right. A parent, I'm a parent. I know I've told my sons things.
Right.
Right. And you say something once and say, do you understand what I'm saying? And they say yes. And then there's no behavior change. So how do you know when that's really the hardest part. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a key part of Kirkpatrick. Should we talk about Kirkpatrick?
Yeah. Because I think, again, we looked at all sorts of things in the industry. Yep. In the industry, we didn't really find anything Mm-mm. that we felt worked. And so that's when we started, okay, we need to do something independent, something on our own, something new. It's not that we hadn't been doing return on investment. So we actually prepared, a very large report for a company we worked with. But again, it was tended to be in spreadsheets and then summary, report of findings. So mm-hmm. So we started out with Kirkpatrick.
And that took an enormous amount
of work. It did.
It was trying to do that every single time.
Right. It was
and
a lot of work.
We did. We do that in some form of ROI in every single learning experience that we create. We talk about it right from the beginning, mm-hmm. right from the kickoff meeting, mm-hmm. to how are you going to know when this is successful. But to do it across learning and do it in deep learning and complex learning, sometimes even in simple learning with a very large audience, it's nigh unto impossible.
Yeah. It's a ton of manual manpower,
right.
if you have to do it that way.
So that's kind of how we started, and I think we sort of both landed on, well, Kirkpatrick. Let's start with Kirkpatrick.
Yeah, that was the model we picked, and I think we've addressed it a couple different times, but mm-hmm. I want to spend just a little time, especially because this is a podcast for people that either may not have a lot of familiarity with Kirkpatrick or maybe wonder why we chose Kirkpatrick, because mm-hmm. we have gotten that question before, and the simple answer is, well, it is an industry standard that a lot of corporate L&D professionals do understand.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there's some criticisms of it, and we can talk about that later. But let's just talk about, Kirkpatrick, if you're listening, Kirkpatrick has a pyramid, right? It's a triangle, mm-hmm. and we start at the bottom. Mm-hmm. But he starts at the bottom by measuring the learner's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So should we talk about Kirkpatrick first, and then we'll talk about what we did to his model?
No, let's talk about what we did to his model. We added something to the base of the mm-hmm. pyramid. So Kirkpatrick is looking at learner reaction, what people learn, behavioral changes, mm-hmm. and impact on the organization at the top of the pyramid. We added a bottom layer because I think there's a great deal of insight to be gained by doing what we did, and that is we are asking the learning teams to actually evaluate what they themselves created. And of course, the first reaction we had was, well, they're going to give themselves all 5 stars.
Right.
Now, everybody's going to say this is the best thing ever created in learning. And if you can't see it, that's your problem. That's not actually true.
No, it's definitely not.
Some of the most insightful things come from the learning team. And over time, when you can see that the learning team is not rating a particular learning experience particularly high, guess what? The learners aren't reacting well to it. They're mm-hmm. not learning much. Mm-hmm. Their behavior isn't changing. And there's a very low or a negative ROI, which is a terrible thing. And so we want to look at insight points all along this path. And we added a bottom level to Kirkpatrick for that particular reason. What does the learning team think of the technology they had available to them, or the time, or the creativity, or instructional design and learning science? Mm-hmm. Were they actually able to instill all of those things? So the learning, you know, psychology and sociology and brain physiology and cognitive, you know, grasping of things. All of those things. Did they actually connect all of those things, or did they just like press out another learning experience
right.
without able to do that? And so
yep.
there are, if that were the only insight, I would say that's not enough. But it's one data point that feeds into many other things. And if you lead a learning team, there are many, many things that you can learn if you just listen to your own team to hear what they're saying.
And being intimately involved with them, I knew from the beginning when we thought about adding them, like they will be their own harshest critics.
They will.
And what I love about it, too, though, is that, I mean, we always have these project debriefs where everybody who had anything to do with the project is involved. And that is an opportunity for the youngest, least experienced, whatever, you know, learning professional to have a small voice and say, well, actually, I think we could have done this or that, or we could have made it better. But again, what we end up with is a bit of, and we score that, and we have lessons learned, and we make changes, but it's still a bit anecdotal. And by adding measurement of what the learning team thinks as we measure ROI, we're also now providing a little bit more hard data. So that person
very much
has an opportunity to even say, well, actually, because the score was so low, and here's why, we should have done it this way instead.
Yeah, and you can reverse engineer it. If you mm-hmm. look at a learning experience that learners did not react well to, they scored low, their behaviors didn't change. Mm-hmm. Go back and look at what your learning team said about it right away.
Right.
And chances are you're going to find you could have seen this coming.
Yep.
You actually could have cut that off at the past. You spent an enormous amount of resources producing what your learners thought was a mediocre thing that didn't move the ball at all. And so if that's a good place to start. So the second, and we should say the way that we've structured this, the other thing that we added into this is the number of metrics that you measure.
Mm-hmm.
If you have 25 metrics and they all have equal weight, there's just no nice way to say it. You're doing it wrong.
Right.
That's too many metrics.
Yep.
And some metrics matter more. So part of what the learning scorecard does, and one of the key features to it, I think, and it took a long time to go through the math on this.
Yeah.
Right. I stared at spreadsheets and finally brought in a bunch of people.
I was going to say, we got the experts. No,
yeah, we're finally
there,
way smarter than me, you know. And I think there was some giggling, maybe looking at what I was doing. But you know, you need to weigh those things mm-hmm. to get a true, you know, there's some, you know, ideas and things like balance scorecard or a triple bottom line of learning. But you have to actually weigh those metrics. You're going to get raw scores. Let's just look at learners, for instance. How did learners react? There might be a couple of metrics that you track, but mm-hmm. they don't weigh as much. They're not as important.
Yep.
When you get to a question like, is this going to change your behavior today? Or would you recommend this training or learning experience to a colleague? That's one you really want to mm-hmm. pay attention to. So the scorecard gives you the ability, gives our clients the ability to set those values on a Likert scale of 1 to 5. Some things are going to be 1s and 2s, some things are going to be 4s and 5s. That then, in some pretty significant math, then produces scores at each level. So you can find out what your learning team thought, you can find out what the learners think, you can find out what the learners actually learned. And then you get into the more complex. Those first three levels, learning team, learner reaction, and learning performance. Not to say those are easy, but those are definitely easier than the fourth level. The fourth level is behavior. How do you measure if the behavior changed?
Well, and I don't... Hold on for one sec.
Oh, you want to go somewhere else?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't. I just... what I wanted to point out is the waiting piece was something that we found missing too.
Very much.
As we were looking at tools. So again, and this also addresses one of the criticisms of Kirkpatrick is, well, like levels 1, 2, and 3, I mean, anybody, you can do that, but are you really, like you said, you're really just measuring, did they get 80%? Did they, you know, we don't know if behavior changes. And by including waiting, you are now at least getting at something a little more nuanced, which is, again, and to your point, we don't need to pick 25 things. We're going to pick key metrics at each level, and we're going to determine how to weight those. The other thing that this does, and I've seen this in action, is that it forces all your stakeholders on the same page, because we have to agree as a group how I'm going to weight this, which can be ugly.
I'm glad you stopped me, because that's an excellent point.
It creates alignment, because, for example, the learning team. So we talk about evaluating the learning team. One of the metrics always is, does this make best use of instructional design practices? As the CFO, I honestly might weight that as like a 2, because we had a crisis on our hands and we just needed to crank something out to make sure everybody knew the safest procedure. I'm having a heart attack on the learning team because I'm like, oh, this really wasn't. But again, that forces everyone to get on the same page and to prioritize and to say, yes, we all agree right now. This is what's most important.
At the beginning of the process.
At the beginning.
And that's often, again, one of my favorite Miriam-isms is slow down to go faster. At the beginning, you're determining the metrics. Before you've built anything, created anything, you're determining the metrics and you're determining how much they weigh, how important they are.
Exactly.
And that's really, really a key component. And that might take a little arguing, because you might have 5 people in the room and they'll divide up into 2 teams and have very different perspectives. Mm-hmm. What you think ought to be key and essential here. So getting that alignment, that's a really good point. Getting that alignment is essential to this early on.
Right. Right. So, okay. So we've added a level. We've asked the learning team what they think of it. Typically, this is done in surveys. It can be done in interviews, focus groups, whatever. And level 2 is, it's called, Kirkpatrick calls it learning. We like to say the learner experience, kind of getting at the UX. Like, was it easy to navigate? Was I confused about where I was supposed to go next? Was it aesthetically pleasing? All those kinds of questions again. And then the next level, which we talked about, is the actual learning.
Yeah.
And in our pyramid here, because we have an extra one at the bottom, which we traditionally think of, knowledge, you know, and all of that is typically built into the learning, although I would encourage our listeners to try some other things. It doesn't just have to be a quiz. It doesn't just have to be a Likert scale or a ranking. There's lots of ways you can. The beautiful thing about the scorecard is it's not even just e-learning. Mm-mm. So, I mean, it can be...
This
things done offline, absolutely, to make sure that we've learned what we need to. And then I'm going to let you go where you're headed, which is level 4 and 5, which are much more complex, more sophisticated and custom. And that's where the scorecard and like the kind of metric modeling and all that really plays.
It does. It when you get into behavior, and again, you have to decide early on in setting your objectives. First of all, what behaviors you're going to decide are most important to you. Because at the end of the day, knowledge itself without application and behavioral change really isn't going to impress anybody.
And it's not going to move the needle at all.
No.
Yeah.
Your organization will stay in exactly the same place it is. So figuring out early on what you're going to attempt to change behaviorally. And the learning experiences are really nothing other than the means by which you're going to change that behavior. Mm-hmm. So you've already made that connection. So in thinking through the behavior, you know, are you talking about onboarding? Are you talking about leadership development? Are you talking about preventative maintenance or a safety issue or a process Or even sometimes a way of thinking.
Yeah, attitude change, yeah.
Attitudinal change. So we talk a lot about know, do, believe, mm-hmm. right? Do I, you know, I know something and I have a skill I have to demonstrate. So figuring out how to build the math model specific to a particular behavior and then figuring out how you're going to find that out. One of the reasons why we made this a software, is because this software integrates with other software, mm-hmm. and that is essential. So it can connect in XAPI through to financial software. It can track into operations software. It can track into HR software. Yep. And so you can track all of those things. And once you can, the really tricky one isn't really ROI.
No, ROI, the math isn't hard, right?
The math isn't hard. It's that behavioral piece. And to do that, systems need to talk to each other. And you can manually input that if you
right,
like.
Right.
You know, you can put mm-hmm. that in a CSV file and then dump it into the learning scorecard software. Or you can automate that process. But level 4, Kirkpatrick's level 3, is really the whole ballgame for me.
Yeah.
Once you can do that, you can start to look at, wow, look at that behavioral change. It's significant. When did that happen? Oh, it happened when we introduced this particular learning experience. Oh, well, let's look at how did learners perform on that?
Yeah.
How did learners think about? How did they react to? What did my learning team think when they built this? And then you look at others where, you know, it didn't work. Behavior didn't change. You're going to be able to find indicators early on in levels 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, they give you the clues.
You could have seen mm-hmm. that coming.
Yep.
And it can tell you even different audiences. Mm-hmm. You know what?
People
in the office don't particularly like this kind of, but people on the shop floor love this
right.
kind of experience. And so you can start to segment your learners and learn which groupings of learners. You could even do it by age, I suppose, or job title.
It really could be predictive in any way you, yeah.
Yeah, however you want. Choose. But you can start to see that this particular kind of learning experience is much more effective in behavioral change than that one.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, what a powerful thing that would be
mm-hmm.
to know you can sort of draw the target around the arrow a little bit. You know where the arrow is, and now you just draw everything around it going forward. So, and then the next level above that is really the ROI. And the ROI calculation is relatively simple. It's what did you spend? What did you say? Oh, one more thing on level 4.
Yeah.
When you look at behavior, it's not just identifying the behavior, but it's also looking at the financial benefit of that behavior.
Exactly, because otherwise you can't calculate your ROI.
Right, you got to have that.
Yeah.
So I know if something goes up 1%, that saves our company $10,000.
Right.
Or if it goes down 1%, it saves us $3,000. You know, think of defects, right? The number of
that
defects.
That was the example I was going to use.
I mean,
yeah, defects,
one,
it's easy, yeah.
Or unscheduled downtime.
Right.
Or, you know, time to proficiency in mm-hmm. onboarding new team members. You can quantify those things. It takes some work. And
right.
you know, thankfully we have a team of really smart people that know how to do that. But that is essential to know that, again, if they go through this and their behavior changes, now you have to be able to quantify that in dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Could be in time, but eventually you're still going to end up in mm-hmm. dollars somewhere. With that, then you get to level 5.
Mm-hmm.
The calculation is what'd you spend, what'd you save, or what were you able to produce more of that was quantifiable, and you have an ROI. And then there's the last component of the learning scorecard, which is essential to me, I think, is it has to be visual.
Agreed. That's Jerry's the whiteboard guru. Everything is visual, and I think it's so important
You can't just show up at a meeting with a stack of 50 pages of stuff and go, here, somewhere in here, there's some really good stuff. You need dashboards. And you need to be able to make this visually. And part of the reason why you need to do that is because, I want to say this as kindly as I can, but every division, every part of an organization is competing for a limited pool of resources.
You are. Yep.
And they all have cool dashboards.
Mm-hmm.
And we built the learning scorecard in a way that you have multiple dashboards. There might be a learning scorecard dashboard that is focused at the learning team, because it's really essential that they see how learners are reacting and how their behaviors are changing. And as you said, you might be sitting in the CFO's office and she doesn't care about that.
Right. User experience. I mean, we've even had meetings like that where we're talking with potential clients about a way that it could be interesting and motivational and gamified. Yeah. And the answer is really like, I don't really care.
Great. Whatever works.
They just need to, this needs to change. Yeah. I need to move the needle here. So
show me how this works.
Yep.
And so you can have a dashboard for the learning team. You can have a dashboard for the operations mm-hmm. people. Because the operations people are going to want to look at and see, okay, we were able to actually change this in our operations overall, or our HR system, or our mm-hmm. financial mm-hmm. system. And then finally, there's a dashboard, I think, that is exclusive to the C-suite.
Mm-hmm.
It truly shows ROI. That is a language that they will understand. They're not in the C-suite if they don't understand
right,
ROI.
Exactly.
And especially the finance people. So the idea is to truly give to bring all of the data together and give you insight. And it's just like other financial software. I think of it a lot of times like NetSuite.
Mm.
There are many other forms of financial software pieces, but it's very rare that software is actually giving you data. You're giving it data. What it's giving you is insight.
Mm-hmm.
That's the value of it. Most financial HR systems and so on, they don't create the data. You already have the data.
Yeah, they're just pulling it. They know where to look. They know how to look.
And they figure out how to integrate it. And then they figure out how to give insight. And the value of insight is enormous.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to defend the spend, but also to decide going forward what you're going to do and not do.
The predictive piece of it. Yeah. Yep. That's what's really exciting, I think.
Yep. So that's kind of the big overview of why we did it, because we saw the need.
Yeah.
We didn't see it available.
It wasn't at least not that we know of. And certainly not, I think, with the waiting piece, the visual dashboard piece, and the actual software.
Yep.
You can find those all in combination.
Integration of all of those data points. So we you know, it's obviously a need. It doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist in the format we needed it to be in. And so we built it through a number of different iterations. And, again, you and I just doing stuff on whiteboards and me staring at spreadsheets and trying to think, okay, if this changed, would that change?
Mm-hmm.
Then you create some, kind of samples. You create a sample company. You create a sample data set, and then you run it through there and see, does this work? Does it work like it's supposed to? That's taken us several years to figure out, but I'm very happy to announce that we didn't give up on that project, even when we might have felt like it or got sick of it. The reaction in the marketplace has been unbelievable for us.
Well, and the one thing I wanted to point out, too, for those of you listening that are deep, we have several people on our team that really experts in both the math or in, organizational psychology. And mm-hmm. you're having minor heart attacks as you're thinking about companies just picking their own metrics, writing stuff, throwing numbers in. The software is built. The software does what it needs to do. But this is a bit of a custom conversation.
Yeah, we call it really semi-custom.
Right.
Or another way to think of it is again, back to NetSuite. When you buy NetSuite, NetSuite is built out. The integration mm-hmm. piece takes a while because you have to integrate your systems and what you care about into what the software is going to give you insight into. And so we think of this as kind of a custom software development.
Mm-hmm.
The bones are there.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what do you want to measure? How much do you want it to weigh?
Right.
And how much does it cost when good things go up or bad things go down?
Right. I mean, that's our team would have several engagements,
yep.
Determining first of all, what it is you want to measure. And then at levels 1 through 3, what is it? How, where are you getting that data from? So I think again, that big gap in the industry is everyone thinks, well, we'll just pull it from our LMS. Well, no, there's multiple places you can get it from. So determining how you're going to get it. And then levels 4 and 5, really, again, another engagement of meeting with our data experts and just determining, again, what is it we want to measure and how we're going to measure that, weighting it. But like you said, and what you want to integrate with, because there's multiple, everything from simple where it is just sort of a, you're uploading a CSV file or whatever, you know, it's more of a manual situation to something very, very custom where we're actually integrating with your HR system or something like, there's multiple options, but, so it's really, I think, the best of both worlds. You're being guided by people who are experts, but we also have this software that's going to give you everything you need at the end.
Yeah, I'm more excited. You know, I was one of the founders of the original company, and I'm as excited about this as I've as anything. Probably more. So,
oh, actually, I've seen it. Yeah, for 2 years.
It's like, hey, this might actually work. Hey, this does work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This could be really cool.
It's very cool. So to you, our listeners, we will put a lot of links in our show notes so that you can access other information. But as we wrap up, one of the closing segments, we always ask, what are you learning well now? With you, Jerry, that could really be anything. And so today, for today's purpose, I'm going to narrow it down.
Okay.
For our listeners, are there any resources like a book, an article, a particular, maybe even like organization or somebody or something you've read? That has helped you better understand this issue of return on investment?
Books like The Balanced Scorecard are, you know, I read that years ago. And if you haven't read it, it's worth reading because it broadens your understanding of what you're actually measuring. Back to everybody's got an investment here.
Absolutely.
And there are all sorts of things. There's some great articles in Harvard Business Review on the triple bottom line. Right now we apply that to learning, but the triple bottom line,
it could be anything,
isn't just a financial metric.
Right.
It's bigger than that. And so those books and articles really help me think about measuring things more broadly and not picking a single metric. Or even a single audience for that metric.
Agreed.
Those things were very good. I think if you want to talk a little bit further out, this will eventually become far more interesting as artificial intelligence gets
involved. I knew you were going to go there. I almost went there during the during our conversation, but I thought, nope, not yet. Yeah. Absolutely, it's going to go there.
I've been reading. When I try to learn something, I always start with its history, right? Where did it come from? Who are the you know, founding mothers and fathers, and who are the really bright people who came up with this concept? And so I've been doing quite a bit of research on artificial intelligence, and some of it is really encouraging. Some of it is on the edge.
Terrifying, I know, right?
Well, we're all gone. We're all useless. But just how it can integrate into, again, giving insight, how it can deal with massive amounts of data, and truly give us insights and understanding. That, not yet, but AI is going to come into play as we're able to manipulate data and understand what it's trying to tell us. The AI functions are going to come in big.
Yeah. I like I said, I thought about it. We started talking about predictiveness and...
Am I really that predictable?
No, I just know the things you like and what you're excited about. So I knew it was coming and I'm very excited. We'll be doing a podcast on that at some point. I know. I'm very excited.
My head more around it. I will never get my head completely around it, but
Well, I so appreciate you joining us today. It's just been fun to talk about. I mean, this has been a passion project for a couple of years now. So we're very excited to share it with you, our listeners. Look for more information. We're happy to talk with you about it at any time. You can actually schedule a demo of the scorecard as well. So we'll have that posted.
Yeah.
Make life a little easier for everyone. So thank you so much for joining us. And to our listeners, we just thank you for sharing your time with us today. We know that you're busy and it's a gift. We really appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.